one thing maybe you could cover, Mick. After you landed on the carrier, you were expected to take off.
Yeah.
And you always see in Top Gun, you know, they put you on the catapult and blast you off. But they didn't blast you off. You had to just give it the power and go.
Right.
So I asked him, I said, well, what happened if the engine quit? And he goes, well, the boat runs over you.
Yeah,
so,
well.
I guess it took a different type of
Yeah. Camp. Well, one of the things, and that's why a lot of times you would, after takeoff, if you're on the angle deck, of course, you're already heading away, but after takeoff, you kind of want to make a turn just to get away from that, away from the heading of the ship so that you wouldn't, if you did have a catastrophic engine failure or so on, that you'd be safe. They also had people there to, you know, plane guards and rescue people to take care of you if you got in. So it was a very well-run operation, and with all the training we had, which was, you know, I think second to none, that Navy training really put you out so you knew what you were doing. So it was a wonderful operation and just great to be a part of it.
So just a little offside here, but the Navy, N-A-V-Y, stands for never actually volunteer yourself. Mick did volunteer for one mission. That was to fly Miss America, or was it Miss USA?
Miss USA, yeah.
Miss USA, yeah. And Halle Berry around Europe. So he volunteered himself. And now he's the lead of the Trojan Thunder. So we'll see him later today when Doc is a solo and Mick's lead. I'm number two, and some of the other guys here among it. With that, Doc, you've owned your T-28 now 30 years as a civilian. You went out in the boneyard to find it, right? Maybe you can explain that.
So, again, welcome everybody. I bought a Bonanza in 1986, and I was looking for something a little more fun, looked at a Pitt Special, looked at a Casa Saeta jet, and then I went to an air show in June of 89 and saw one of these beasts sitting on the tarmac, and I didn't know what it was. And I looked and looked, and I walked up to the guy in a flight suit standing there, and I said, is that a P-47 with a nose wheel? A dumb question, obviously, and he didn't move a muscle except the corner of his mouth to say, T-28. I'd never heard of one. So I went home, and about a week later, there was an article in AOPA Pilot, cover article, the T-28 Trojan, and I went over and I said, boy, this is a great plane. I got to buy one before the prices go up. So I started looking and found NATA, which is our North American Trainer Association, contacted them, and they sent me an article by one of the T-28 gurus back then, John Harrison. He called it the Marvel Mystery Warbird. And it starts out, what warbird is out there with 1,425 horsepower? It can pull 6 Gs. It can outturn and outclimb a P-51 Mustang, has all hydraulic controls, has 4 electrical systems, and can be bought at the fraction of a price. Oh, the T-28. And then I was really pumped up. So I looked around from the East Coast to the West Coast for a T-28, and NATA suggested, well, why not go to the Boneyard, Davis-Monthan Air Force Base in Tucson, see if there's any available for sale. So this was now July of 1989. And at that time, there were 25 T-28s sitting on the field at Davis-Monthan, owned by the Navy Museum in Pensacola. And in May of 89, they were looking to restore a PBY Catalina and needed a wing. Well, of course, there are no wings in the parts bin, so they found a civilian who had a wing and traded 5 T-28s on paper for a PBY wing in May of 89. In June of 89, that person sold 3 of them to a T-28 parts dealer in Picayune, Mississippi, for $30,000 apiece. 2 months later, the Honduran Air Force was releasing all its T-28 parts, and so he quick sold them for $45,000 apiece to a broker in Florida. So when I went out to Davis-Monthan, and they said, well, these 3 are available for sale, and I looked at the books, looked at the plane, and picked the best of the lot, and they said, well, write a check for $90,000 to the broker in Florida. So from May or June till August, it went up from 30 to 90,000. And it had been sitting in the boneyard since 78. So my plane was manufactured October 55, 2 months before I was manufactured, and served with the Navy including 2 years in Kaneohe Bay in Hawaii, but mostly down in Florida, training Navy pilots, flying 11,000 hours from 1955 till 1978 when it was put in storage. In those 11,000 hours, it also got 11 engines. And these engines are basically what was on a B-17, but more horsepower. They bumped them up to 1425. So this plane had been sitting out there. I came back 2 months later. They towed it across the lot from Davis-Monthan, put the engine on, took the prop out of the box, and the guy licensed it for me for 10 grand. So 100 grand, I was in with a T-28 that still had the spray latex all over it, cobwebs in the inspection panels, which he never opened, and so forth. So I flew it. I had to fly it for 15 hours for the insurance company. I told the guy, well, you're going to get my back seat, which he wasn't expecting. So we're at Tucson International doing touch and goes for an hour or so. And on the 10th one, all of a sudden, electrical smoke fills the cockpit. And I said, what do we do now? And he says, well, I guess the next one's a full stop landing. And the generator had torched on it. He never bothered to oil anything. But anyway, I thought that rather than taking this plane home to Illinois, I'd take it out to California to Bob Hoover's mechanic, Bob Grant at Great American Aircraft in Torrance. And he was going to do a six-week once-over to really inspect things and clean it up. Well, he called me at home a month later and said, listen, do you want that carburetor overhauled? It's been sitting in a box for 11 years. And I said, well, how much does that cost? He said, well, it'll be $1,000. I said, well, it got me from Tucson to California. Don't overhaul it. But then I slept on it, and the next day I said, go ahead and overhaul it. So they sent it out to a great shop in Washington State, and they overhauled it. Unfortunately, that six weeks turned into a year before I got the plane back. It was just busy. But when I got the plane, I flew it all the way home. And that was December of 1990. I took off with a guy in the back seat, and we got to about 1,000 feet. I went from takeoff power to climb power, and the engine just quit. I said, what's going on here? And I made the turn, tried to restart the engine by hitting primer, but I came up about 15 feet short of a taxiway. When I threw the gear out the last second, it just stopped flying, and whoomp, it hit quite hard and rolled off into the dirt. And I didn't think it was much worse than most of my landings up to that point. But we had bent the wing up, and the plane was kind of totaled. Well, it turned out that that carburetor that got overhauled, there's a fuel metering valve inside that gets safety wired, and they had forgotten to safety wire it. So after 27 hours, it wobbled free, and when I went from takeoff power to climb power, it just flooded the engine, and hitting the primer certainly didn't help that. So the plane got disassembled. Two guys came out from California. 8 hours later, it was on a flatbed truck, very quick. Truck back to California for a year. I had a bent wing, and I said, well, what am I going to do about that? And they said, well, there's three wings built up for Vietnam, the D wings with all the hard points, sitting in crates in Reno, Nevada, $10,000 wingtip to wingtip. And I said, well, sold. So I got a new wing with all the hard points, and that's when I started looking at the manuals, seeing, you know, the different paint schemes, what could I do, what carried all that armament. And I found this Vietnam camo scheme that just looked really awesome. My wife looked at it and said, oh, that's ugly. And so she pages through, how about this pretty one? So that's Eglin Air Force Base in 1961, just before they went to Vietnam. It's a D-10, which was a B model converted to a D model. Now, to make a D model out of a B, you've already got the big engine, but you get the wing with the hard points. You get armor plating around the seats, which I don't carry, self-sealing wing fuel tanks, and a thing called the Yankee extraction system, which was just a big bottle rocket sitting behind your head. And if you had to go, the det cord would explode the canopy, hopefully. But if not, the rocket would punch through it and just pull you out of your seat. And there you are in free fall, and you pull the ripcord. Not exactly a 0-0 system, but it saved some lives in Vietnam. So mine, except for the bottle rocket and the armor plate, is pretty much a D-10. I also found all the armament, so I've got bombs, rockets, machine gun pods, but you just can't do aerobatics with all that stuff, so that stuff's at home right now. I brought it to EAA in 1992, not knowing what the heck was going on. In fact, I came late because I couldn't get the engine started. And I fussed over for 2 days. And finally, I looked at the ignition vibrator box, and a little washer had floated up during my meager aerobatic attempts and grounded out the magneto at the starter of the vibrator. And I just, oh, what's this doing here? I pulled it out. Vroom, I start up. I show up late to the show by about 4 days, and everybody went crazy over the plane, and it won Grand Champion Warbird in 1992. And it's actually the last Grand Champion Warbird ever, because when I showed up, I beat a Corsair that was absolutely beautiful, but they gave complexity points. And because of the hydraulic systems, the electrical systems, all that, I got a couple extra points, and I beat him. And boy, was he hot. So at that point, he talked to the directors, and then the very next show, they split it out. Grand Champion Warbird, World War II. Grand Champion Warbird, post-World War II. So I have the distinction of being the last Grand Champion Warbird. So that was back in 92. I was flying it. I started doing aerobatics up at 10,000 feet and got my low-level waiver a few years later. And then I was approached in 2003 for a new air show team called the Trojan Horsemen. And we did a six-plane formation and aerobatic show for 14 years, and I was the lead aerobatic guy and just had a blast with that. Also, during those years, we flew at Oshkosh. Most of you have seen or been in the big wings that we fly. But my distinction back then in 92, 93, I'd come out here, and we'd be sitting all day till the afternoon show. I said, what the heck's with that? Let's go fly. So I started what's called the morning calisthenics. And we meet on the Warbird porch early in the morning. We put together the flights. We go out and fly, make some passes like that beautiful B-17 is doing, and then come in and land and get our extra licks in.